Boom. Good morning, everybody. I'm Joe. It's good to see you. Very welcome to you all. I am, as Andy said, I'm one of the elders here at Grace Church. Generally, I am based at our newest site in Havant, which is going really well. It's actually my first Sunday since we've launched Havant, not being in Havant. So it's great to be here, great to be with you guys. I am also a firm believer that the beautiful game is indeed returning to its natural habitat. And football is coming home. I certainly believe that. In a week today, we're all going to be loving life. But this morning, we're going to be in week two of our little mini-series, which I'll tell you a bit more about in a minute. If you have got a Bible, why don't you grab it out now? If you don't have one, then you can put your hand in the air, and one will be brought to you. If you don't own a Bible, then you can take that one home. And that is a gift from Grace Church to you. Take it home and enjoy it. We'll get to the Bible in a minute. I wanted to start by talking about birthday presents for a minute, actually. Now, everyone has their own preferred way of getting a birthday present for someone else, and giving someone a present. Some people like to be given a list, don't they? So they kind of know exactly what to get. They don't stray from the list, and they know that the thing they get for the person is going to be enjoyed to some extent. Some people go one further and just like to give cash, or, you know, a voucher or something. Some people like to just kind of stray from a list and try and be creative, which is obviously good, but then that has the slight gamble that you're going to miss the mark totally and get them something they don't want. I don't know where I sit. I don't know where you sit. I like to be creative, but I'm not particularly good at it, so I often just end up getting something that they don't want. But one thing everyone wants when we get someone a birthday present is that we want the person receiving the present to enjoy it, don't we? And to use it, hopefully even to use it regularly. We love to give presents that are used a lot, don't we? But how much more is that the case when we are kind of loaning something to someone or asking someone to look after something on our behalf for a limited period of time? So, you know, house sitting or something like that, or someone looking after your dog. Yeah, you want them to enjoy it a bit, but you certainly want them to look after your house, don't you, or your dog, whatever it is. You want them to take it relatively seriously, to have a degree of serious responsibility about what you're doing, and to understand that they're kind of looking after it on our behalf, if you see what I mean. There's a bit of a difference. We give someone a birthday present, then we kind of want them to look after it ideally, but at the end of the day, you think, well, it's your present, you do what you want. But if we're loaning, you know, if we're asking someone to look after something, then we really do care that they look after it to some extent. And this morning, we're carrying on our preaching series, which we've very simply named Jesus on Giving, where we're going to be looking at three things that Jesus said on the subject of money and giving. Now, money is by no means the only thing that we preach on here at Grace Church, but at the same time, money isn't like a no-go area here when it comes to our preaching. So in the autumn of last year, we preached on giving as a special one-off gift. And, I mean, the church responded in an amazing way, didn't it? It was a remarkable time. A lot of sacrifice being made, a remarkable level of faith. And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking more about our regular giving and our general stewardship of everything that we have. And that actually, our regular giving, is something I haven't talked about since 2015 as a series. So it's kind of overdue. And at the end of the day as well, it is just good to teach about money and what we should do with it, because the Bible teaches about it a lot. And if we're preaching the Bible, then we're going to be preaching on that subject. And also, it plays a key role in our relationship with God. And so we're kind of unashamed to be preaching on it this morning and through this mini-series. And through this series, we're going to be asking everyone at Grace Church to take a faith step in the area of their giving. You might have noticed these little sheets, these pages in the What's On sheets that are kind of pull-outs, and we're going to be looking at these every week over these 3 weeks. And they're just, to say right up, they're just for your personal reflection. No one's going to be collecting them in at the end. I'll explain a bit more about them later. But as I say, today I'm talking more generally about our general stewardship of all the stuff that we have. I'm going to be talking about true stewardship. So before I use that word stewardship, you know, too many times without giving some idea of what I'm talking about and some definition. Let me just put a definition straight up there. When we're talking about stewardship, we're talking about how we handle the resources that God has entrusted to us. How we handle the resources God has entrusted to us. And the reason I was talking about birthday presents and house sitting and stuff like that and stuff is because stewardship of our things, the resources that God has entrusted to us, is way more like house sitting than it is getting a birthday present. It's not like God has given you a present, a birthday present, you know, or lots of presents, as the case may be, and he's just kind of, you know, hoping, oh, I hope you enjoy it, I hope you use it well, but at the end of the day, it's your present, you do with it whatever you want, it's up to you what you do with it. No, it's more like we're house-sitting or something on his behalf, and he's entrusted things to us, and certainly we're free and encouraged to use them well and for our own enjoyment, but also to look after them and to manage or steward them well. So what are the things, what is the stuff, the resources that God has entrusted to us? I'm going to put up a list. What has God given you to steward? Your money. Pretty obvious, that one. Straight off the bat, God has given you your money and entrusted that to you. Your possessions, all of your things, your iPhones, your car, your clothes, etc. Your house, which kind of different to your possessions. It kind of is a possession, but slightly different, and the responsibility that God has given you in that. Your time. Every one of us has been given 24 hours every single day, and God has entrusted that to you. What are you going to do with it? Your skills, your gifts even, your abilities, the things that you are good at are things that God has entrusted to you to use and to manage well. Your job is a gift from God. Your body, what you do with your body, is God has entrusted your body to you to steward well. Your family, your marriage, your children, any family relationships, that's your responsibility. Your church, especially the case for elders, that one. In the Bible, one word, overseers, and kind of literally is stewards. Elders are stewards of the church, but it's also true for everyone. If you're a member of Grace Church, and it's the sense in which Grace Church is yours to steward and to manage well as well, play your part. Your words, what you say, how you say them, what you do with your words, your responsibility to manage well. Your spiritual life is certainly up there, isn't it? How you manage your spiritual life. And the earth or environment is the last one. I've just put that one in brackets because it's kind of a theological debate, really, whether we're given responsibility to rule over the earth or to steward it. But that's another question for another day. So God has entrusted a lot of resources to us, hasn't he? A lot of things that God has entrusted to us. Let's get to the Bible then, see what it has to say. Specifically in this series, we're looking at what Jesus says. And this morning we're going to be in Luke 16. So feel free to go ahead and turn there now. Luke 16, we're going to read 1 to 15. It's known as the parable of the shrewd manager. Slightly surprising at times, this parable, when you read it. And you might pick that up as we read through. But let's read Luke. Luke 16, 1 to 15 says this. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What should I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe?' 3,000 liters of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 1,500. Then he asked the second, 'And how much do you owe?' 30 tons of wheat, he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill, make it 24. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches. And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And the Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. So what people value highly is detestable in God's sight." So, as I said, it's a potentially confusing and controversial parable. There's that weird bit where the master commends the manager for his shrewdness in basically ripping him off, ripping the manager off. It seems a bit odd, doesn't it? I think the best explanation for that is that this is just the master commending the manager for kind of having his own back, if you see what I mean. Fair enough, that's what I would have done. I would have just looked after my own back. It's not Jesus necessarily commending the manager for his poor selfish shrewdness. And it's not even Jesus commending the master for commending the manager for commending the man. Did I say that right? Maybe. I think you got what I said. It's not that. The important thing to remember, actually, when we're looking at any of Jesus' parables are just stories that Jesus told, really, is that they almost always only really have one main point. And so we can be at risk of getting bogged down in the detail, and we need to be wary of doing that. And in this instance, actually, in this parable, Jesus does kind of explain the main point towards the end, which we'll get to. So what I'm going to do this morning, I'm going to explain a bit about what Jesus is talking about here, and then we're going to look at how we can apply it into our lives, and then look a bit at kind of our motivation in it. That's where we're going. I think we can summarize what Jesus is saying through this parable is this. We are not masters of our stuff. We'll get there. We're not mastered by our stuff. We are managers of our stuff. So we're not masters of our stuff. We are not mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our stuff. So firstly, we're not masters of our stuff. This is really what I was talking about before we read the passage. What we have been asked, what we have been given and asked to do is more house sit than it is receive a birthday present. In this parable, we are represented by the manager. You can put yourself in this parable as the manager. We are not the master or the owner. God is represented by the owner or the master. And just as a master or owner entrusts responsibility and resources to a manager, so has God entrusted resources and responsibility to us. But we do not ultimately own them. And this is something that is just so clear in the Bible. 1 Corinthians 4:7 says, "What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not?" There's nothing that you have that you didn't receive from God. There's loads of other verses. I was reading recently Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It is all his. What do you have that is not his entrusted to you? Some people like to try and deny this stuff, don't they? I've worked hard to get to where I have got to. It is my blood, sweat and tears that has got me the money I have and allowed me to go on the holidays that I can go on. But we need to remember that everything we have is a resource that God has entrusted to us. So your job is a gift from God. And your skills that got you your job are a gift from God. And the environment you grew up in that allowed you to go and get the skills and get the training that you need to get your job is a gift from God. And the drive you have to get the skills, to get your job, it's all a gift from God. Any one of us could have been born into an Inuit tribe a thousand years ago. And you could have been the cleverest person that's ever walked the face of the earth. You could have been the most driven person, the most, you know, you could have had the best social skills of any person ever, but you would have never been rich. You would have always been poor. You would never even have gone on holiday because of your situation. We are not masters of our resources. We can convince ourselves we've earned what we have by our own excellencies. You can try and convince yourself that, you know, those who have less, they've just got less because they haven't worked as hard as me. You can say that if you want, but it's not true. All our skills are gifts. Everything you have is a gift from God to you. It's important to remember as well that God has actually given us way more than just our stuff, just our resources. He has spared nothing from us and even given his own son for us. Romans 8:32 says, well, there's another verse of God, we are not masters of ourselves, every good and perfect gift is from above. And Romans 8:32 says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, give us all things? Without the gift of his son, without the Father's gift of Jesus to us, we would have no true hope or joy or peace, however much stuff we had, however many resources we had. But out of his grace, God has not even spared his own son so that we can know hope and peace and mercy. It is only by grace that we have anything. It is only by grace that we can know joy in any sense. It is all a gift from God. God has spared nothing from you. There is not one thing that God has held back from giving to you so that he can engage you in a relationship with you. Just as his son was a gift of grace, so is everything else. It is not yours. It is all a gift of unmerited grace from God. We're not masters of our stuff. Secondly, we're not mastered by our stuff. I'll be brief on this one because I think it's pretty simple. We are not masters of our resources, but we aren't mastered by them either. We are not controlled by them. So Jesus concludes this parable by saying this in verse 13. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Notice, he uses the word cannot there. It's not should not, you know, it's not like ideally not. It's you just can't. You simply cannot say that God is your Lord and your master if money is your master, if you are controlled by money. It's pretty simple. And most people in our culture, they do actually live for money in at least some way. The decisions that people make are based primarily on money and what is the best financial outcome of this situation. Now, I'm not saying don't ever make financial decisions because that would not be good stewardship of your money. But I'm just saying that is money the primary driver in your decisions? Are you controlled by money in the choices that you make? Have you become a slave to money? And it's not just money that we can be mastered by either. Do you maybe not have people around your house because of your carpet or something? You don't want to get a stain on your carpet, so you don't have people around your house. Maybe you say, oh, I've just got no time to serve in church, but you can get through a binge watch of a Netflix series every week. Maybe you could manage your time a bit better, and maybe you're a bit of a slave to your time. So we aren't masters of, but we are not mastered by our stuff either. But we are managers of our stuff. This is stewardship, handling the resources that God has entrusted to us. Everything you have is a gift from God to you to steward. We aren't masters of our resources, so we don't own them, and we aren't slaves to them either, but we have been given responsibility of managing them on behalf of the owner. So just like a manager in a company, in your job, just like your manager, a manager is not the owner of the company's resources, including staff, but the manager has been entrusted responsibility to steward and manage them well and make the most of those resources. Verse 10 of our passage this morning says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. This is, again, I mean, it's a pretty simple truth. If you are faithful with little, you'll be faithful with lots. And if you can't be trusted with little, then you can't be trusted with lots. It's a principle we use in parenting, isn't it? So if you've got a child who has, you know, never crossed the road on their own, or never been outside the house on their own before, and they come up to you and say, hey, mum, dad, can I go to London with my friends next week and get the train up and spend the day in London and then come back on my own? You're probably going to say no, aren't you? Because you think, well, hang on, you need to prove that you can cross a road before I can entrust you with that much responsibility. It's a simple principle. Same with grumpy people, actually, this one. I don't know if you've ever heard someone say, oh, I really hope that I'm not grumpy when I get older. I've heard people say that. And it doesn't really make any sense to me because it doesn't actually work like that. People's grumpiness doesn't depend on their circumstances. Grumpy people are grumpy, and not grumpy people are not grumpy. Do you get the principle? It's not about how much stuff you have. It's not about what your situation is. It is about your heart. The point is that your faithfulness and your trustworthiness in the management of the resources that God has entrusted to you is not dependent on what or how many resources that you have. It is only dependent on whether you are faithful or not. And if you are faithful with a little, or grumpy with a little, you'll be faithful with lots. Hang on, did I say that wrong? No, because that's a negative and a positive. If you're faithful with little, you'll be faithful with lots. If you're grumpy with little, you'll be grumpy with lots. That is right. I'll get there. I need to get there. Anyway, so grumpy people, faithful people, it's all the same. The point is, some people can think as well, no, I'm not one of those people who kind of copes well with, you know, little responsibility. I'm not really very well at, don't do well at being led by other people. I'm good at leading people, but I'm not so good at being led. No, Jesus says that is rubbish. If you are leadable, you will be a better leader. And if you are teachable, you'll be a better teacher. That is how it works. If you can be trusted with very little, you can also be trusted with lots. It's also important to note that just like the manager in this parable, who is accountable to the master for how he handles the resources, we are also all accountable to God for how well we have managed the resources that he's entrusted to us. I'm not talking about your salvation. I'm not talking about heaven and hell here, whether you can be saved and enter into relationship with God. That depends entirely on whether you believe that Jesus is Lord or not. Jesus has made a way for every one of us to enter into a relationship with God the Father, and he has dealt with our sin and everything else that would prevent us from that relationship. All we need to do is believe in him, and we get life in him. But we will also be held to account for how well we have handled the resources that God has entrusted to us. So, for example, like I said, God has entrusted the church to all of us, but particularly elders. And God has entrusted his church to elders and will hold elders to account for how well they have stewarded the church. Hebrews 13:17 says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. It's a sobering thought for me as an elder of this church, but it's pretty clear biblically that's the case. And I think it's equally clear in this passage that that is to some extent the case for all of us when it comes to the resources that God has entrusted to us. So we aren't masters of our stuff. It is all a gift from God. We are not mastered by our stuff. We're not to become slaves to it, but we are managers of our stuff. When I say stuff, I just mean the resources God has entrusted to us. God has given us responsibility, and it matters how you use it, how faithful you are at stewarding that responsibility. So let's apply it then. How do we apply it to our lives? Well, we've got all these things that we have been given responsibility to steward over, haven't we, which I put up earlier. And in order to apply this a bit more, get a bit more practical, I'm going to be talking pretty exclusively about how we manage our money. And I'm going to be doing that for two reasons. Firstly, money is the focus of this passage that we've read. It's clearly a passage talking about stewardship, but it is focused around money. So that's how we're going to apply it as well. And secondly, I sincerely believe if we can focus on the area of money and get this right, or at least make progress in this, then I think all the other things will fall into place. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The best statement of your heart is your bank statement. I'm preaching to our hearts this morning. You get that? I'm preaching to our hearts, and I think if we can get our money right, then that is evidence that we've got our hearts in a better place. What we're going to be doing is going to be looking at some signs that might indicate I could improve my stewardship. Signs that can say that you would be a better or a more faithful manager and in the area of money. Now, let me be clear straight up that we can all improve in the way we steward the things that God has entrusted to us to some extent. I'm going to put a list of signs up that we can improve, and I'm confident that you will see yourself on there somewhere. We will all be on this list. I am certainly on there. I'm not perfect at this. I'm not pretending I am. I'm just preaching the Bible and preaching biblical principles, and sometimes they can involve being a bit offensive. So if I offend you, then it's the Bible, and I'm not that sorry, really. But these are principles of the Bible, and we're all on there somewhere. Signs that can indicate I can improve my stewardship of money. Firstly, using payday loans. Hopefully no one is doing this. If you are using those payday loans where it's, you know, like 1,000% interest every day on your loan, then you probably need some help, actually. You need to seek someone and talk to someone, and, you know, we can help you in some way. These will not help you, payday loans. They will destroy you. Don't use them. That would be a sign you're not managing your money as well as you could be. Another one, hiding bills or ignoring them. This might be an indication that you are not stewarding your money well. No one likes getting a bill, do they? But are you kind of just, you see it and you just hide it under a rug or something? Or are you racing to get there before your spouse because you're so scared or hiding? That would be a sign that you could manage better. Similarly, a fear of bills. So not necessarily hiding them, not even ignoring them, but they kind of just strike fear into you when you get them and you think, oh no, not another one. You kind of don't know where it's coming from. Another one, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Do you know what I mean by this? You know, when you're just kind of moving money from one account to another to sort out a bill, but you know it's just going to cause a problem over in this account, and you're kind of moving it. It's kind of a sign that you're in control of your money to some extent, but you could be stewarding it better. No clear budget. If you haven't got a clear budget of what money comes in and where it goes out, then you can improve your stewardship of money. Maybe you are unable to say what your true bank balance is. I don't just mean open up your phone and look and you can see a number and that's what your bank balance is. I mean your true balance. What I mean is, you know, when you can factor in all the bills that you've got to go out the rest of this month, how much money have you actually got in your account to play with? You don't need to know off the top of your head that one, but if you went away and spent some time figuring out, you could find that one out. I know I'm setting the bar pretty high with all this stuff. I mean, I'm essentially setting it at perfection because I'm saying areas that we could improve at. I'm aware of that, but that's what we're doing. If you found yourself yet, I've got another page to go. So another one, regularly going overdrawn. If the way your finances work is that you find yourself regularly going overdrawn and this is an unsurprising or a normal thing, then you could improve in your stewardship. You could do better. Credit card loans are going up. I'm not saying never have credit cards. Sometimes they're helpful. Sometimes they're even necessary. But is what you owe increasing or decreasing? Do you have, you know, a system that you put in place, an agreed timeline in which to pay your credit cards off? Like I say, I'm up there. I don't know if you found yourselves yet. I'm up there somewhere. I'm not going to tell you where I am. I'm not saying I've nailed this. But where are you? Where are you on this one? Maybe you are living on next month's money. Are you living on the money that you already have or on the money that you will get? If you're living on next month's money, then that's not ideal management. Maybe you're living on the credit card in some way. It's not ideal. What about this one? This one is a killer. If payday feels good. If you are budgeting well, then theoretically, payday should just be a neutral day when it doesn't matter that that's the day you get paid because you know how much money you've got anyway. That's a tricky one. Then, but if that's an emotionally good day, then you probably improve your stewardship. Maybe this one, wealthy but no idea of income and expenditure. Certainly, all of what I am saying, I'm not just talking to those whose finances are tight this morning. I'm not just talking to people who have tight finances. Maybe you've got loads more money coming in than you've got going out, but you don't really know where all the money's going. You just know you'll be fine. That you could be stewarding and managing your money better. It's not perfect stewardship. Maybe this one. We wouldn't want a friend to see your bank statement, or maybe even your spouse. Now, if you had to sit down with your friend or anyone you know and kind of show where you've spent your money, that would be a bit embarrassing. You know, there's something on there. I know we're English, so none of us like to do that kind of thing. But if there's particular things on that list that you know, or don't want you to see that, then probably you could be stewarding it better. You could be putting your money in better places. And then lastly, one more. If you are not a generous giver, if you are not giving your money generously, then that is a sign that you could improve your stewardship of your finances. God wants us to be generous. We are not masters after all, but we are managers. It's all His anyway that we have. Now, I'm sure that you found yourselves out there somewhere. It's not about guilt, this. It's important to be clear on that. It's not even about sin. I'm not trying to just make you think, oh man, I'm rubbish, I can't do this. It's not about that. It's about growing. You know, it's a journey, isn't it, that we grow day by day. No one is going to nail it overnight. It's a journey of learning. And all we can do is say that today I'm going to be better than I was yesterday. That's what we're looking for. We're going to improve in this area. God wants for all of us, and I want for all of us, to live lives that are free of fear, walking in faith, using the resources that God has entrusted to us to be serving Him and serving others. And I think it is clear that God, particularly when it comes to His people, but really everyone, He would have us be generous givers. If we are to be good managers of the things that God has entrusted to us, then we need to be generous with them. And certainly generous with our money. I think probably the primary way that we show God, we display that we recognize we are not masters of our stuff, but we are managers, is by giving back a proportion of our money to Him through the church. In giving to the church, we're giving directly to God. And I'm not preaching for my salary here this morning. It's important that we say that, or anything else. I'm not preaching anything other than your hearts, to give your hearts over to God. I really am. Give your heart to God by giving generously to Him what is already His anyway, and it will bless you richly. It will be so good for you. And there is a faith step that every one of us can take today in the area of our giving. So let's look at this diagram that we have in our What's On then, as we put this into some kind of practice and look at generosity in our stewardship. It is a key part of our stewardship and our management of money. This is something we're looking at, as I say, every week through this three-week series on Jesus on Giving. And the reason the diagram is shown as a plant like that is because giving and our hearts is a growing and a kind of changing thing. No one can say that they have reached the pinnacle of this plant. Say, yeah, I've totally nailed giving for the rest of my life. It doesn't work like that. Everyone has room for growth in some way, really, or certainly at least room for reassessment. And that might be you. But we all have room to just kind of reassess again where we are in this area, in the area of my giving. Generally, I am talking to members of Grace Church this morning, but equally, I do sincerely believe that all of these principles would benefit anyone in their lives if they were to steward their money better and even give generously to God. It would bless them richly. So you'll notice on the sheet that you've got that there are some tick boxes. We're asking everyone in Grace Church to prayerfully consider if they could tick any of these boxes. You can grab it out if you want to. We won't be collecting these back at the end, like I said. They're just for your personal reflection. There's two questions on there. Where is your current level of giving on this diagram? And what faith step could you take in the area of your giving? Let me encourage you to either fill one of them in today, or maybe it is the case that you need to take it home and talk to someone else about it. That's what I would be doing in this area. Take it home. Put it somewhere you can't miss it. You know, put it on the fridge. If you are someone who's got like a really tidy desk and you like to keep it tidy, put it bang in the middle of your desk so that you cannot move it until you've addressed it and dealt with it. Put it somewhere that's going to annoy you. So where are you then? It may be that you are currently a non-giver and you're therefore not actually on the plant if you haven't stepped into giving yet. Here's a stat for you. Nearly 25% of Grace Church members do not give in any identifiable way. So I know there are some members who are not on this plant yet. let alone non-members. I don't know who you are, by the way. I don't know who those people are, but you can make a huge faith step this morning by stepping in and making a start. I think this is probably the biggest leap on the whole plant. Going from never giving to giving something requires a huge faith step. And it is a huge opportunity for you for growth and development in your faithfulness and stewarding. Could you maybe tick that first box and then commit to give, to commit to yourself of making a first-time gift? Or maybe you have given before, and you do so every so often when you feel led, or you know, on gift days, whatever it is. Could you step up and give more regularly? Maybe add in to your budget to do it every month and steward your money in that way. Move to a place of regularly worshipping and thanking God through giving. The first step for you would be to set up a standing order or something like that. There are others who give regularly every month or every week, who give, but proportionally, they're not giving 10% of their first fruit income. Now, certainly, I don't know who these people are, but is God calling you to go that a bit further and give 10% regularly? It might be that this would require a bit of work with your finances, you know, and your stewarding. You might need to scrap your existing budget if you have one, or create one if you don't, and put in your giving first and then start from there, rather than looking at your budget as it is and trying to figure out how you do it. It might require a bit of work, and it certainly requires faith. Well, you might be doing that, and God could be calling you to go to the next step and to give over and above, to give sacrificially in a new way. God has given us everything we have. He hasn't even spared his own son in giving us all things. There is no limit to what God is worthy of. And he calls us to display our gratitude to him in the way that we give of our money. Maybe you could step in to this level of giving today. The New Testament calls us to this level of giving. We should be aiming to get there eventually. Maybe you're there already, but let me encourage you to at least review where you're at with God. It's a dynamic plant, this thing, so no one has arrived. No one has nailed it. Taking any one of these faith steps requires serious spirit-filled faith. The faith step will be different for anyone, and you might be a totally different place to the person sitting next to you, but we can all grow in the area of our giving. You know, God is not looking for kingdom fundraisers. He doesn't need our money. He gave it to us all in the first place. He could take them away at any point, is the reality. He is looking for disciples who grow in maturity and stewardship and love for him. And it helps you in making your faith step. I want to talk about this thing for a minute. You might have heard of this before, and maybe you've had a professional area in this training, but I want to think of this in terms of will, skill, or focus. It's the idea that if you want to grow in something, you first need to identify what it is that's holding you back from growing. So, for example, if you've got someone who's you're training in to play golf at a relatively high level, and you want to, but they're not really flourishing quite as much as you'd hoped, before you help them to grow in that area, you need to identify what it is that's holding them back. So if they just can't really be bothered and they've lost motivation, they've lost the will to do it, it's no good just spending hours focusing on the fine details of a putt or something like that, because they're not interested. You first need to focus on the will and get them driven for that. You get the principle. You need to focus on the right idea. And if there is anything holding you back from taking a faith step in the area of your giving, then it will help you to identify what it is that is holding that back before you can do anything to address it. So I'm going to look at these in a slightly different order. First, I'm going to look at skill. It might be the main thing that is holding you back from improving in your stewardship and in giving generously is that you don't know how to do something. You maybe want to do it, but you don't know how. Maybe you want to set up a budget, but you don't even know how. You want to transfer some money, you want to set up a standing order, but you don't actually know how. Then, very simply, you need training in an area, don't you? Come and talk to someone. Seek someone. Go talk to me or any one of the leaders here. We'd love to help you. Don't let this hold you back from growing in maturity and taking a faith step. And just to notice as well, we're going to be running a life skills course here in Bognor in the autumn, which I'm super excited about. If you really could do with some training in this area, then get involved in that course. That will bless you and serve you well. Or it might be a matter of focus. You might know how to do the thing you want to do, and you might actually want to do it. You want to grow in stewardship of your money and any area, but you just can't get around to do it. You keep forgetting to get around to do it. At the end of the day, this is just a matter of obedience. Just get on with it and do it. Just step up and do it. If this is you, then you can thank God for the gift of standing orders and for the gift of rotas. These things are gifts to us to help us to commit to doing things. So we don't have to just think, oh, I wonder how I feel on the day. No, we've committed to it, and they help us to do it. They're gifts to us. Or it might be a matter of will. And this really is the big one. This is the one for all of us. It is ultimately all about the will. Because if we really have this in place, then we will motivate ourselves to get the skill or the focus. It is all about our hearts this morning. This is what God is after. He wants our will, our hearts, and our desires. And I'll close with this. I heard this recently, and it has helped me personally a great deal in so many areas, but certainly in this area of giving. If what we think we have, if how rich we think we are, if how privileged we think we are, how blessed we think we have been is kind of this much, and what we think we deserve is this much, we think we deserve everything that we have, and in fact, we actually deserve way more than what we have, then the gap between those two things leads to incessant grumbling. We will be grumpy and will be utterly discontent. However, if what we think we have is this much, if we think we are rich and privileged and blessed beyond ways that we can even understand, and what we think we deserve is down here, we think we have actually made way more than we really deserve, then that gap leads to utter gratitude. The reality is that the things God has entrusted to us and given to us are way, way beyond what we deserve. We don't deserve anything. No one has ever given to God that God should repay him. He owes us nothing. And yet, despite us deserving so little, God has given to every one of us so richly. He has given you your money, your house, your possessions, your job, your skills, your body. We're only really house sitters of all of this stuff. It's all his anyway. And more than that, ultimately, God hasn't even spared his own son in what he has given to us. His own son was given to die for you because he loves you. If the thing holding you back from taking this faith step this morning is the will, and it is holding us all back to some extent, then we just need to remember and appreciate all that God has lovingly and graciously given to us for our hearts to be so naturally drawn to him. We love and we give to God because God first loved us and gave to us so richly. So let's honor God with responsible management or stewardship of all of our stuff, and let's worship him through generous giving that springs from hearts of deep gratitude for all that he has done for us and given to us. If the band could come up, that'd be great. Why don't we all stand together and just be mindful of all that God has given to you and entrusted to you. Why don't you grab that sheet out again and just have a look at it. The band are going to start playing, but I just think it'd be good to spend a moment or two just mulling over this sheet and where God would have us be. I want to focus on two things as we think about this sheet and where we could go, what faith that we could take. Firstly, let's just think of the abundance of things that God has given to us. And then secondly, what faith step is he calling us to make with our money as we give back to him what is already his anyway? Just focus on those two things. Firstly, what is focus on all that God has given to you. And secondly, what is the faith step that you can make? And just the band play. The band's just going to play a bit. And we're just going to wait in the spirit, really, and mull over those two things for a moment. Don't let this opportunity pass you by, whether it's now or at some point over the next few days or weeks. Take these sheets home and mull over them, and take this opportunity to grow in maturity, to grow in faithfulness and relationship with God, your hearts to be drawn to Him. In a moment, we're going to take communion together as well, as we, again, just celebrate all that God has given to us. Nothing more so than His own Son. God gave His Son Jesus for us, and Jesus died for us on a cross. His body was broken for us, and His blood was poured out so that we can have the blood of life in Him. What's going to happen is the basket's going to come round to you where you are, and it's just with some bread, and which represents the body that Jesus broke for us. And then there is non-alcoholic wine at either side. Once you've received the bread, feel free to go out of your seats and go and grab that, which just represents the blood that Jesus poured out for us. Let's enjoy this moment. Let's celebrate in this moment as we give our hearts and rejoice over all that God has done. We're going to sing as we do this. The basket's going to come round, and yeah, let's worship God with our hearts and rejoice for all that He has given to us so richly.